Morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, July 6th, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever you are listening. Never a dull moment in the life of Nick Kyrgios, that is for sure, and a huge night for Australian tennis ahead with Kyrgios and Alia Tomjanovic looking to make the final four of a Grand Slam for the first time at Wimbledon as well. And we're waking up to this news this morning. That Kyrgios, the Canberra Times reported, the 27-year-old set to appear in court August 2 on an allegation of common assault against his ex-girlfriend relating to an incident last December. Not too much more we can say. Through one of his solicitors who has emailed a statement to the media, says that the allegations are not considered as fact and he's not considered charged. But anyway, he is set to face court August 2. Just the news you need, isn't it, Loz? Heading into a huge game at the All England Club tonight.
I'm sure he could do without it, Nick Kyrgios. But those are the allegations. So he'll have his day in court to be able to defend himself down there in the ACT. Obviously, it's a domestic issue. And Nick Kyrgios at the moment is over there in London playing Wimbledon, and he's playing some really good tennis, and I'm sure this news would have rocked him last night, our time, but he has a game of tennis that he certainly will focus in on and get this competition out of the way and then obviously zero in on these charges, these allegations, and sort of go to court and see what happens from there. But, you know, there's no denying that he's a firebrand on the court. He polarises a lot of people, Nick Kyrgios. He's through to the quarterfinals, and I think a lot of people, I don't know whether it be split 50-50 or 70-30, people wanting him to get beaten, or how many people would like to see him win and go through to a semi-final.
I think, morning to you, pup, I can't help but say I want him, despite his antics, still want him to win.
Hmm.
He's still there as an Australian tonight, so you want him to win?
Yeah, but I don't think there'd be a lot of support out there for him. I'm like you. Yeah. I want him to win. I think it could be 50-50, but I reckon it'd be a lot of people out there that don't support him and don't want to see him win.
Morning, Pop.
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. So I'm just a little confused here. Can you help me, please, Mido, for my own education? So he hasn't been charged, his lawyer's saying, yet he's got to go to court.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me. The other thing that doesn't make sense to me is the incident happened back in December.
Mm.
And he's being charged now, or he's being told about it now? Did Nick know about this, do you reckon, back in December? Or have police had this information for a while? I just don't know how it works. Like, if there's an incident 12 months ago, can someone still
I'd say they'd be charged
for that?
It. I suppose the allegation was laid then, but then
was laid in December.
It was probably laid in December, and then they investigate it and then try and get to the bottom of it and then see whether any charges should be laid or not.
Well, I think all these details are still to come, Clark. I'm gonna sort of join the dots and say a reporter at the Canberra Times probably looking at the list of appearances there at the ACT Magistrates Court, saw Nick's name on it, and have gone backwards from there.
So you think Nick's probably known about this?
Potentially, but okay. Reading between the lines, but I, you know, don't want to say too much, but perhaps.
Yeah, heavy. Again, you know, I think we've discussed this on a few occasions on this show, in and around dealing with any sort of issue in private is one thing, but then once it becomes public, it goes to another level. And even if, you know, if Nick did know about this at the time or did know this was coming, it shines a spotlight on you. So it'll be hard for it not to affect his performance tonight. You know, there's so many, like I say, when something goes into the media, it's really hard not to, you know, to take no notice. And I think we all at certain stages say, you know, we don't care what other people think. You know, your mates, your family, your friends, they know the truth. But, you know, even if you don't read about it, somebody close to you is reading about it, and they will generally ring you to check you're okay, or, you know, they'll tell you what's been written. So it's not like you don't hear about it as well. So I think this is, you know, right, wrong, guilty, innocent, that's one thing. But for me, this is a massive test for Nick Kyrgios tonight. You know, you talk about mental strength. And again, I think I've said it a million times. This is what made Shane Warne the greatest I ever saw. The way he was able to leave things off the cricket field, walk out onto that stage and perform, and then once he come off the cricket field, go and deal with it, was freakish. And this is going to be one of those things for Nick he has to face right now. You know, can he leave this distraction, a very big distraction, off the court and go and play his best tennis like he has been doing in this tournament so far?
And just have a look at the market with Tabby's $1.18, so he's a hot favourite to reach the final four. Christian Garin of Chile, $4.40. Alia Tomjanovic, a slight outsider, around $2.50. When I last checked, $2.50 with Tab against the 17th seed from Kazakhstan, Elena Rybakina, who's $1.50. And they've met once before, those two. Kyrgios and Garin have never met, but Rybakina beat the Aussie at the Madrid Masters last year. That, of course, being on clay. Pup overnight as well, or last night, England cantered to victory. Yeah, against brilliant. India by 7 wickets, thanks to an unbeaten 269-run partnership between Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow. Root 142 not out, Bairstow 114 not out. That's the largest run chase in a fourth innings in England's history to win a test match. And thankfully, it beats the 359 they got famously off the bat of Ben Stokes at Headingley, 3 years ago?
Yeah. Class win. Unbelievable innings from both Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow. England deserve so much credit again. Their attitude, the way they come out and play, their attacking nature, they've, you know, call it new captaincy, call it new coach, whatever it is, they are there to try and win. They are not scared of losing anymore, which is the complete opposite to what they were when they come to Australia on their last tour. They don't fear losing. They're going to have a crack at winning, which is a great sign for Test cricket. And I think England are going to, you know, you'll see them go from, I think they're ranked 7th or something in the Test Championship at the moment, or 6th. You'll see them go straight back up to the top of the tree. They keep playing like this. On the other side, India were poor. Thought they're batting in the second innings. They probably had the opportunity to, you know, to not take things for granted and score more runs and bat England out of the game. But even still, with 370 on the board, I watched the start of yesterday and I've got no idea why India wanted to change the ball. The ball they started with was reverse swinging. It was quite soft and it was reverse swinging. And then about 7 overs in, they went to the umpire and complained about the ball. They wanted it changed. And generally when you're changing a ball, it's because you want a harder ball. Or if the ball you're using is doing nothing, there's no swing, so you think, get a new one, shine it up, and we'll get it the swing. But the ball India had, the fact that it was soft and it was reverse swing, it was going to make it hard for England to score. And that's what I said to you boys yesterday. The key for India at the start of day five was to try and minimise the amount of runs that got scored before that second new ball. And they had about 20 overs to bowl, or 23 overs to bowl, I think, with that old ball, and try and get that ball to swing some way, the natural swing if it was overcast, or reverse swing if conditions were dry. And it was reversing. So I had no idea. I think that was a massive mistake India made. And in the end, probably wouldn't have mattered the way Johnny Bairstow and Joe Root batted. But even still, when two blokes are in terrific form, you need any advantage you can get. So if the ball's swinging, hang on to that.
They would have paid a price for, like, their bowlers in particular coming off the IPL, wouldn't they? And not having a great preparation leading into that game.
It would have played. Yeah,
that
definitely
would have hurt them, wouldn't it, for sure?
Definitely plays a part, yeah. Loz, but
they're on top, though.
Mate,
they
you look at that it's harder to lose that test match than win it from the position they're in going into the second innings.
So but for the bowlers wise, it would have been tougher, wouldn't it? Like, they're coming out of an IPL.
It's a one-off test for them as well. Like, generally, if that's a three-test series or a four-test series for England, for India, different story, but one-off test match. And a lot of their prep when they'll at the back half of the IPL, their test bowlers would have been getting the workload up in the nets and things like that. They just haven't got, they haven't had much test cricket in the lead-up and playing in these conditions, but it's a one-off test.
Fair point.
England looked brilliant.
Yeah, mate. And England had those three tests against the Kiwis.
Yep.
Their prep, I reckon, would have been a bit better. But you're right. You know, India, we come to expect them to win in any conditions now, not just at home. And that would be a poor loss for them.
Well, that's going to be the challenge for England now. I've read a fair bit this morning around what certainly what Ben Stokes is saying in regards to how they're playing and their attitude. And I think there was a little comment that, oh, I wish India got a 450 run lead to see what we're going to do. I just, slow and steady, England. You're playing in your own backyard. Just, I know it's rainbows and butterflies at the moment with this aggressive approach, but you know, let's see how you go against the Aussies, or let's go to India and play India in India. I think that might be a little bit different. But at the moment, you know what? They were brilliant against New Zealand. This is a very special victory. So, you know, if you're going to gloat now, they deserve to, I guess.
12 months, we'll be over there. The Ashes series, not that far away.
Well, they'll be tough over there.
It'll be different, won't it, Clark?
Tough over there, yeah. I think, again, you know, for me, and this is a good example, even the same team that they brought to Australia, a different attitude, a different approach, you know, that lose the fear of failure or the fear of losing, and we're all better. You know, it makes you a better player. It just gives you so much confidence when you can get that fear out of your head. And, you know, that's, call it coach, man, management, leadership, whatever it is, that's the key. That's how you get the best out of your players. Release the fear, let them play their natural game, and back them to the hilt. And I know it's only just begun for Stokesy and Brennan McCullum, but that's all they've done. They haven't turned Johnny Bairstow from an average player into a great player by going to the nets and batting for 10 hours. It's mental. It's just, you know, releasing the shackles and let him go and play his natural game, back his natural ability. That's all that's happened.
Okay, back page of the Courier Mail, and Reece is the word is the headline there. So news yesterday. Well, firstly, News Corp reported that Charles Nicholl-Klewstar is off home to New Zealand to join the Warriors and will be released from the last year of his deal at the Raiders. So therefore we went, well, what's going to happen with Reece Walsh? Then as part of that report, it's being reported that he's heading back or set to land at the Broncos. This hasn't been confirmed yet, but the Courier Mail and a News Corp journalist saying that he's set to go back to the Broncos, where, of course, he left, was yet to play a first-grade game there, but left to get opportunities, went to the Warriors, and we know what he's done there. So that means the Dolphins miss out on another player as well, Loz, and a spine player. You know, they desperately need 1, 6, 7, and 9, you would think, for next year. And, well, this is a massive blow for the Warriors, first and foremost, and a blow for the Dolphins. And what a coup for Kevin Walters and the Broncos, should it be confirmed.
Well, if he goes to the Brisbane Broncos, that just adds to their young talent that they have up there at the moment. And the Broncos are playing some really good football. They've got a number of guys representing in the Origin arena. And they're developing a strong football team, and Reece Walsh will add to that. Obviously, very disappointing if you're a Warriors supporter, the fact that they signed this young kid. They offered him plenty of money, got him signed. They thought he was going to be the long-term replacement for Tuivasa Sheck, and now he's saying to them that he doesn't want to go over there to New Zealand. And the fact that they've signed Nicholl-Klewstar from Canberra, that suggests that this deal will go through. You know, Charns obviously can't see a way forward there with the Raiders with the emergence of Xavier Savage. So, you know, he's received an offer from the Warriors to go back there and play. So that's a nice fit. But, yeah, they'd be disappointed that Reece Walsh will not play for the club, because he is a talented kid, so much potential. We see him on the verge of Origin selection last year. He was part of that Game 2 squad for Origin over there in Perth, and now for him to be turning his back on the Warriors and going to the Broncos, obviously the Warriors would be very, very disappointed. They'd be shattered, in fact.
Yeah, and just on the text line, Reece Walsh is going to cop some blowback for this for sure, should it obviously be confirmed. Hey, boys, Reece Walsh is gutless. The Warriors gave him an opportunity on big money over there after his off-field discretions, and now they're going back to New Zealand. He wants out. No name to that one. But I'm sure he said not too long ago and almost bristled at the question when he was asked, you know, whether he was going to go to the Dolphins and not go back to New Zealand. He said, no, I'm going back to New Zealand.
Well, he said he was going to honour his contract. Yeah. But circumstances change. We all realise that. And he'll be grilled about why he doesn't want to go back there now compared to what he was when he was asked this question 6 months ago. Look, the Broncos did have him in their system and they couldn't find a place for him in their top 30, and the Warriors did. So that was good recruiting by the Warriors, but as it's turned out, you've got to be able to keep them once you get them on your books. The Warriors could have played hardball and said, no, you're coming over. But then you've got a disgruntled player in a different country. He's only a young man. He's got a child. A lot of things you've got to take into consideration. So, and Chance has obviously got an opportunity to move from the Raiders over to the Warriors. So that suits them. They've got a mature age player. But I'm sure they would have been building a lot of the future around Reece Walsh.
Now, front page of the telly today is the news. Front page, by the way. Nick charged with assault is the headline there. And a few texts here, you know, people getting stuck into the media and to us here. But look, well, I'll read this out. Fair dinkum, boys. Typical from Aussie coppers or media bringing up charges at this time. No more to promote themselves than anyone. Hope it doesn't throw Kyrgios off and goes all the way. Come on, Aussie hambone. Look, while I understand people say this is a conspiracy, and you know, I don't think the media was there waiting until Nick Kyrgios made a quarter final at Wimbledon to break this story. Reporters, you know, report what they learn, whether it had been through a, you know, finding out through the courts in the ACT or finding out through a police source or whoever they found this story out about. You get approved by it legal internally at their news organisation, then they report it. It's unfortunate, you know, it's come today.
And the other thing about my concern with this, Mido, is this is the thing that I've always said with when something touches the media. I feel, and maybe because I've sat on the player or the athlete side, so I feel like in Australia, it's like as soon as it touches front page or back page, that the athlete's guilty. And then he has to go and prove his innocence, right? Where I think, you know, for me, I think I've made my feelings clear about Nick. I think there's certain things that he has done that, you know, I don't ultimately love. But for me, with something like this, he has to be innocent until proven guilty. You know, and I think that's the only thing I worry about with something like he's got to play tonight. So he's going to have to do a press conference after the game, win, lose or draw. He's going to be questioned on it. There's certain people in the media that don't like Nick Kyrgios are going to go hard on him. So he's in an awkward position. And that's why I really hope he can actually leave this off the court, go and play his best tennis and then try and deal with it as best he can. But I just hope for everyone's sake, let go of your opinion on Nick and how you feel. With something like this, it's so important that, you know, we allow it to play out. If he's going to court, let's see what happens there. But we can't just assume because it's in the media and we're sitting here talking about it that, and forget the person, forget whoever it is, that they're guilty. You know, I think you've got to start innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, that's the law in this country, and I think everyone should accept that. The fact that the assumption of innocence should always be given, regardless of who you are. Let it play out before the courts, and then we find out what the outcome will be. Just going back to on these, why would they release it now, the news, when he's in a quarter final? I don't know whether the media would have done that in the past or not. I'm unsure. But I know in today's environment with so many platforms, once you get that story, it's hard to keep it under wraps for a long period of time. And you're breaking it first. That's the way that they operate today. And I'm sure that would have been over time as well. But because there's so much, so many ways you can source your news these days and everyone's looking for the scoop and everyone's looking for that, I've got it first. Once this was found out that Nick Kyrgios had these charges against him, it was always going to be out there straight away.
Yep.
They weren't going to hold it back and wait for him to make a quarter final at Wimbledon.
Nah, spot on, Loz. So, yeah, that's tonight. It's going to be because that British media, can you? they're already just hammering him.
I think there's a big part over there, Mido, that love him, though, mate, to be honest. I think he's one of those players. I think there's a big part of the England press that they love what they get from him. They love his honesty. They love that he's different. He does his own thing. And there's the same here in Australia. There's a big part that does love him for him being him completely. But Yeah, trust me, when you polarise, there's plenty that don't like you as well. So you got to accept that. You can't take the good media and not want the bad. You can't take the positive press and not take the criticism. Unfortunately for him right now, it's probably not a lot he can say because it's going to court. But he's going to have to take the questions. And that's the other thing. I hope he turns up to the press conference. Don't run from it. Don't hide. Whatever the situation, even if you can't answer the questions, sit there and say that as many times as you have to. Don't run from it. Front it.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll be at that news conference after the match. Well, he has to, unless he, but he, you know, knowing Nick,
yeah,
he'd
pay. You're not meant to wear red shoes or a red cap either.
He'd pay a big fine just not to, but I think Nick will be there.
Yeah.
Quartz and all, the headline on the back page of the Herald as well. Kyrgios and Tomjanovic fly the flag for Australia in the Wimbledon quarterfinals tonight. Can they go all the way? Let's hope so. We'll speak to Roger Rashid for a full preview of those quarterfinals later this morning. On the back page of the telly, Blues put smiles on the dials, and great to see them at Lismore yesterday. Got quite emotional too when the mayor of Lismore was telling them about what's been going on in the recovery and floods that they've been dealing with in northern New South Wales there. And also on the back page of the telly, legends say veteran the right coach to clean up Tigers. Mr. Sheens, and you're quoted here about your old coach Loz, Tim Sheens, that perhaps in the short to medium term, he should take the reins.
I think he'd be perfect for the job. I said yesterday that I don't think it's a job for a young, inexperienced coach. I think it's a job for an experienced person. Tim Sheens is as smart a football brain as anyone I've had anything to do with. He's had a big part of the Raiders' success. A lot of the Raiders players wouldn't have turned out to be the players they were without his influence. Tactically, he is one of the greatest minds I've ever come across. He knows how to build a club. He knows what it's like to have success. He's been through the ringer a number of times himself. He rides the wave as better, or if not better, than anyone else. All these experienced coaches, they've been through every scenario you can think of, and nothing fazes them. And I think if he gets a younger coach in there, he can help mentor them. He can wear all those bruises that, you know, might come along the way over the next 2 or 3 years, help set the place up with this young assistant coach, and then have him take over, you know, as a succession plan. That's the way I see the Tigers going forward. Rather than getting in someone that's untried, untested, let's give him a go. It doesn't work out in that 18-month period. You're in the same position you are now. The board gets a little bit edgy. They're not getting the results. What do they do? Do they stick solid, or do they go, you know what, we're going to go down another path again? Or whether they look at this system where you've got Tim Sheens, a man who's coached at every level of the game, he's had success at every level, give him time to build, mature a squad and have them ready, set up for the future of the West Tigers.
We've got Dick Fane from the States coming up shortly, and just also some Wimbledon results overnight. Novak Djokovic against Jannik Sinner, the Italian. He was down 2-0, the Serb, and he's won the last 3 sets and got through.
Devastated, Mido.
Through the last 4. Oh, I'm delighted for him.
Heartbroken?
Mate. No, well, hopefully we can... Well, hopefully we see Kyrgios and him play in the final. Could you imagine? Cameron Norrie, British player, 9th seed. He's through in 5 sets after beating David Goffin of Belgium. So he's through to the final 4 as well with a big win in the quarterfinals. Ons Jabeur of Morocco, the 3rd seed, beat the Czech player Buzkova in 3 sets. And in an all-German affair, Maria beat Niemeyer in 3 sets as well. So there are your results from overnight in the singles. And we're cheering Nick Kyrgios, $1.18. Christian Garin, $4.40 with Tab later tonight. And Arda Tomjanovic is $2.50, outsider, against Elena Rybakina, $1.50 in your Wimbledon quarterfinals tonight. Just a text here. Our morning boys, love the show. First time texter and good on you. D-Mac from the Shire sending this in. First time texter. In regards to the NRL 6 again rule, what about the idea of the game doesn't finish until the final set is complete, like they do in rugby? That's revolutionary, Loz. We're going back, obviously, in regards to the Canberra Dragons result on Sunday, where we saw the controversy at the end of the game.
I had this discussion, oh, I reckon it was 2 years ago, in a selection meeting.
Right.
When the selection for the Aussie team was over, and there was myself, Darren Lockyer, and Mal Meninga just, you know, chatting away about different things. And Lockie actually brought this up. Darren Lockyer is a fan of this idea. He thinks once you've got the final set, you've got the football, and it's the final set, you get to play it out. That was his idea. He thought, because it stops that, you know, lying on the tackle play, you've still got one or two tackles to go. But then what happens if you are on tackle four and as a defender you knock the ball down and then the team gets the ball back, so they get a restart?
Well, the set hasn't finished.
So then you get the advantage of having extra time, whereas the game only goes for 80 minutes. So we were just chewing the fat, but that's an option that, you know, guys like Darren Lockyer have thought about and spoken about before.
I don't mind it. DMAC from the Shire. Text line 0419767272, by the way. What do you reckon, Clarkie? Play it out, the final set?
Man, stop changing the rules. Get on with it. The game's perfect. Why do we keep changing all the rules?
Okay, Clarkie's spoken.
Oh, it does, mate. We've got a new rule every day. It's never going to be perfect. I think Danny White has said it spot on yesterday.
We're never going to be completely happy.
We're never going to be happy.
That is
very
true.
We're always blowing up about referees. And it's happened since day dot, and it'll continue to happen. Yeah. And we always talk about consistency.
We bag rugby every second we get, yet we're trying to do something that rugby does. But, like, what are we thinking?
I think where I get frustrated with rugby, and this is the path I don't want rugby league to go down, is that you don't know what the penalties are for. And we're getting to that stage in the NRL with six to go is that we overlook what has actually happened, and all we do is see the referee waving his hand again and everyone's sitting there going, well, what was that for? Whereas in the past, there would be a penalty, they would explain, or you would see on the replay why it was given. But now it's all subjective. That's where the confusion starts to happen, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't know what it's for.
And the referees absolved because the game's just
continued on. The game just keeps flowing.
Okay, time to go to the States. Now, how are you, Dick?
Oh, I'm doing well. Doing well. Back to work now after a brief July 4th holiday.
Yeah, and we're consuming, if it's the word that we should be using, Joey Chestnut's win in Nathan's hot dog eating contest, and loved his takedown of the protester as well. How much, admiration and attention does Joey Chestnut get there in the States?
Well, I think since there's nothing else going on in the sports world to speak of other than a handful of baseball games on July 4th, I think it's been something that people watch. Certainly ESPN heavily tweets it out because they want people watching it. They want people following it. So they were tweeting basically on a minute-by-minute basis leading up to it and also afterwards. But, yeah, you did see a little unusual sidebar there with the protester and the Darth Vader helmet coming and get choked out. I mean, the force was definitely not with that guy. There's no question about it.
Have you ever interviewed Joey Chestnut, Dick?
We haven't. I think there was an opportunity to at one point, and we had I think something else lined up. I might have been at a Super Bowl. I think, you know, that's usually when the guys like Joey Chestnut.
You can't flick the Chestnut, Dick. You can't just flick him.
Well, I know that's true. That's true. 15-time champ now, but you have to understand. You have to understand. This was well over 10 years ago. So, you know, Joey Chestnut was not the megalith.
I've got so many questions for him. I've got so many questions. I just want to know.
Have you seen the vision, Loz? Have you actually?
I did.
Did you watch him the other day?
I saw the vision yesterday.
Looks like they're dry reaching before they put a new one in.
I've got to find out what happened straight after the event.
It's horrible. Oh.
What do you reckon happened straight after the event, Dick?
I would imagine that they've got to get rid of that stuff, yes, right? I mean, you can't survive. I mean, you can't survive with all of that. And you know, I was impressed as well as at Eric Booker. I mean, down in that gallon of pink lemonade. Did you see that? I mean, that was unbelievable. That was almost as impressive as the hot dogs. I mean, a gallon of pink lemonade in like 30 seconds. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
it's disgusting.
The UFC, has there been much reaction to Alex Volkanovski, who we take great interest in here? His win over Max Holloway. I know that there was a lot of debate in the States that Holloway was better than Volkanovski. I mean, how much attention do you give the UFC, Dick?
Me personally, not a lot, but there are, you know, there is a faction of UFC fans. I mean, a hardcore faction of UFC fans. It's fairly small. But you know, obviously I see all the updates on Twitter, because the major news outlets, particularly the ones that are carrying the bout, will tweet it out. So, you know, I wouldn't say that any of them are really household names. But it really has taken over from boxing over the last 10 to 20 years as being the most popular of the fighting sports. I mean, it was always boxing up and through the Mike Tyson era. And then after the Mike Tyson era, I mean, I think people just, you know, we saw the splintering of the different, classes and of heavyweight boxing. And I think that drew people to the UFC. And Dana White's done a very good job. I mean, you got to hand it to him. And he has done what boxing was unable to do, and that is just to keep the sport together and keep it with some interest.
What's happening with some college football over there, Dick?
Guys, it is a reckoning right now with college football. A couple of years ago, Texas and Oklahoma, actually maybe it was last year, Texas and Oklahoma decided that they were going to move to the Southeastern Conference, which were basically the two biggest programs. For those that don't know, there's been five power conferences in college football. And those five power conferences are splintering up, and what we are going to see in the very near future is two mega conferences, one controlled by ESPN and one controlled by Fox, as it is all being driven by television dollars, television ratings, and these massive TV contracts. Because keep in mind, college football is clearly the second most popular sport in America. There's the NFL, then there's a gap, then there's college football, and then there's a gap. And then there's everything else, probably the NBA after that. But it is a massive, massive financial deal, college football. So what we're seeing now, the biggest news this last week is that USC and UCLA, encompassing that massive media market in Los Angeles, has decided to leave the Pac-12, basically cuts the legs out from the Pac-12 conference and all the schools here on the West Coast, including my alma mater, Washington. So that leaves these schools scrambling, because the Pac-10 is just going to burn down. So because there's no pillars, you know, no strong pillars holding it up, Washington and Oregon being the strongest ones, but I don't think Washington and Oregon, either one of them, want to stay in the Pac-12. They want to join the Fox Conference, which is the Big Ten, which is most of the Midwest. And so I think that's what's going to end up happening. I think Washington and Oregon go to that conference with USC and UCLA. They'll kind of have a Western division and an Eastern division. And soon enough, we're going to see just two conferences left. And I mean soon enough. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. Like within 5 years or so, we're going to just see, you know, two mega conferences with 20 or so teams in each conference, and then the rest of the college football basically has to fend for themselves in almost a second division. I think at some point it might turn into kind of a Premier League type situation, where you have a first division and you have a second division. And if you're good enough in the second division, you might be able to make the first division. And if you can't hold your weight in the first division, potentially you could get relegated to the second division, like we see in English Premier League football.
Dick, what about in the NBA? What's the latest with the Lakers, and what's the latest with our friend Ben Simmons?
Well, you know, I just was reading a couple hours ago something interesting, that the New Jersey Nets might use Kevin Durant as a way to get rid of Ben Simmons. And basically say, if you want Kevin Durant, I mean, they hold all the cards, right? I mean, Kevin Durant can demand a trade, but Kevin Durant can't demand where he goes. Right. It has to, one, it has to fit financially, and two, it has to bring a haul big enough for the Nets to pull the trigger. So the Nets can trade Kevin Durant, but say, hey, if you want Kevin Durant, you got to take Ben Simmons off our hands as well. I mean, that's happened many, many times in the NBA, whether it's a, you know, the, you know, a trade a superstar, but you attach a bad contract to it to get rid of the bad contract. Well, Ben Simmons certainly is a bad contract. I think there's still promise for Ben Simmons. I still think he could be a good basketball player, but at this point right now, he's a bad contract. So, I would not be shocked if a Kevin Durant trade involved also getting rid of Ben Simmons.
Wow. Well, Brooklyn's out to $41 to win the title. Kyrie Irving, the other one to unpack from this. So what are the chances of him landing back in LA at the Lakers with LeBron James, which would be some story?
It would be some story. It would salvage the Lakers, at least in the short run, because I actually think that kind of works a little bit. I think LeBron and Kyrie, well, we saw it worked a few years ago. It works better than LeBron and Anthony Davis do. There's really no hard evidence. There's no hard reports right now that that's being looked at. But we're along with this Kevin Durant deal is going to have a lot of ramifications. And potentially a Kyrie Irving trade would be one of those potential ramifications. But I think KD, you know, and usually in a situation where it's trades or whether it's free agency, it's the biggest dog goes first, right? And then after the big dog gets traded or after the big dog signs the huge free agent contract, then all the smaller dogs get sent or get signed. And so I think we're going to see the Kevin Durant situation figured out first and then everything else, Kyrie potentially being another one.
Gosh, it's going to be a mad free agency period. The Pelicans, what are they set to sign Zion Williamson to a huge contract? I see Malcolm Brogdon is going from Indiana to Boston, who are favourites to win the title next year. Nikola Jokic, what a max deal, 5 years, $264 million, the richest contract in NBA history at the Nuggets. So it's all happening, Dick. Who are the other players we're going to be watching?
Well, I mean, just think that we had an hour go by in which $1 billion was spent in the NBA in 1 hour in free agency. That's how big this has gotten. I think the Clippers are an interesting look to see, you know, potentially does Kevin Durant land there? That would be interesting because, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant could absolutely coexist. It is impossible right now to handicap next year's NBA champion until we find out where Kevin Durant goes. Once we find out where Kevin Durant goes, then you can potentially handicap them. The Minnesota Timberwolves are very interesting. Minnesota just basically gave up every first round pick from now until eternity to get Rudy Gobert from Utah, and so now you've got a team in Minnesota that was really coming alive at the end of last season and played very well. You know, they won that play-in game to get into the playoffs for the first time in a long, long time. The city went absolutely nuts. Anthony Edwards showed to be one of the best, you know, under 23, under 24 players in the NBA. You add a Rudy Gobert, you know, arguably the best interior defensive presence in the entire world to that basketball team. And all of a sudden, Minnesota now is a legitimate player. They go from like seventh, eighth best team in the Western Conference now, you know, as high as, who knows, third or fourth best team in the Western Conference. So that's going to be really interesting.
Where does Mido's favorite player end up, Dick? James Harden.
Oh.
Well, right now, I think he still ends up in Philadelphia. I think he's going to stay there. I don't think Philadelphia made that trade just to have James Harden for 2 months. So I think he's going to end up there. He picked up his option. We'll see what happens from here on out. But that would look odd if they traded away, unless it was, again, just to get rid of Ben Simmons' deal. But I think they are going to try to squeeze something out of James Harden, even if it's just for one more year.
The NFL, it's getting closer, Dick. And any quarterback destination news in regards to, well, Baker Mayfield at Cleveland and Jimmy Garoppolo of the 49ers and your Seahawks, are they looking at one of those? I suppose only Mayfield out of those two would be, I guess, a slight chance.
Garoppolo got a bad rap because he's taken, what, San Francisco to two Super Bowls, hadn't he?
He has, yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo is in the right situation, is a quality quarterback. And what the right situation is you don't put too much on his shoulders. You give him a good defense. You give him a good running game. You give him a good play caller, which is actually exactly what San Francisco's been the last 3 years. It's been the perfect scenario for him. However, you know, their coach, Kyle Shanahan, doesn't really particularly – Kyle Shanahan wants to have a gunslinger. Kyle Shanahan wants to have a top 10 quarterback. And you can tell. All you need to do is go back and look at Jimmy Garoppolo's pass attempts in playoff games. It's unbelievable. Kyle Shanahan literally doesn't let him throw the ball in playoff games. He's like, I'm just going to let the rest of my team win this game, and you just don't screw things up for me. And Jimmy Garoppolo does a really nice job of not screwing things up. So when the rest of your team is good, then Jimmy Garoppolo is a solid option there. As far as Baker Mayfield, we just have to wait for the Deshaun Watson case to come down. I don't know why necessarily Cleveland wants to wait, because everybody that, you know, all reports are that the bridges have been totally burned on both sides. So if the bridges have totally been burned, I don't really know why Baker Mayfield hasn't been released as of yet. I mean, Cleveland frantically wants to try to get some value for him in a trade, but I don't think that's going to happen. If they get any value at all, it'll be a late, late, late draft pick. The only way I see him come to Seattle is if you know, Seattle offers like a sixth or seventh round draft pick and says, hey, Cleveland, you got to pick up like $16 million of his $20 million contract. If something like that happens, then I could potentially see him in Seattle. But Seattle's not going to give up anything of note for him, and they're certainly not going to pay much of his contract at all, because, you know, it's Cleveland's bad deal. So nobody's going to bail Cleveland out of the dumb decision they made to give Baker Mayfield $20 million.
Well, September's not far away, Dick. Thanks so much.
Here we are, boys. We'll talk to you next week.
Dick Fain there. And, huge free agency news in the NBA. That is for sure. One to watch in the next week or two. News is next with JR. Coming up, though, later this morning, Adam Pengilly, Dean Bulldog Ritchie, Roger Rashid, Brad Davidson, Damian Cook will be on Friday. And Tom Papley, the Swans forward, big game they got, SCG, Western Bulldogs, Friday night. Overnight at Wimbledon, quarterfinals, Novak Djokovic, two sets to love down against Jannik Sinner, but the world number one has won in five sets. And he did it pretty comfortably the last three sets, 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, after dropping the first two, 3 hours, 35 minutes on court. Also, Cameron Norrie, the British player and ninth seed, threw in five sets as well against David Goffin of Belgium. And in the ladies' singles, in the all-German affair, Maria beats Niemeyer in three sets. And Ons Jabeur of, Tunisia, I think I said Morocco earlier, but she's Tunisian. And, the third seed, she beat the Czech player Marie Buzkova, the world number 66. And Ons Jabeur got the job done there in three sets after dropping the first. Jamie Rogers, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and good morning to all of our listeners. Laurie's come in looking sharp with a fresh haircut today.
Yes, I have, JR. I got a haircut Monday afternoon. And I look very, very good. I put some gel in it yesterday.
Well, just on that.
Did you say that out loud? Myself.
Just on that. Last night I was watching on Fox League, Bradley Clyde's edition of League Legends, which is a great program. Loz, you were on it a couple of weeks ago. And there was a shot of Clyde, yourself and Ricky. I don't know, you're walking out of something. You know, down the street in the middle of the city. Yep. And you are wearing, without doubt, one of the most sickening shirt-tie combinations, as 90s Daktari. As it could be. You're wearing just, you know, a stock standard navy or dark suit.
That was in the 90s.
Yellow shirt. Lime.
What colour shirt?
Yellow it is, Clark. I'll send this to you. Mm-hmm.
What?
Yellow shirt and just a spew tie.
No generation where a yellow shirt is good for you.
It's called stylish.
Mate, it's called Daktari. It's called punishment. You must have done something wrong, and the team said you have to wear that shirt.
No, it was just, what I used to get around in when I was in the heyday, just trying to do my best.
The second I saw it, I was out of the seat, pausing on the remote. I've got to take
a photo. What colour ties you got with it, with the yellow strip? Oh, you've sent it to me, Mido. Rightio.
Yeah.
Oh, Loz.
And to you as well, JR. Mm-hmm.
That's about 92. That's about 30 years ago, boys.
I remember those ties. I actually remember my old man having those ties. Not sure about the yellow strip, though.
But that was so the trend of that time.
That's exactly
like that was. That's such a 90s, yeah.
I'm not sure that's the trend of any time, Jamie.
And look, he looks very happy in it, too. Very pleased with himself.
Oh, very, very. I'm always pleased with myself, JR. Well, you know, you mentioned my haircut yesterday. I went back because they cut it a little bit short. So I had the car.
But you go back, ask them, put it back on.
No. So I had the car parks. So I had the car parks up there. So what I did, I put a bit of gel in the hair. To just cover the car parks up a little bit.
It's a little treat for your hair.
Yeah. So it was good. No, I got a lot of compliments yesterday. Was that a...
Well, I must say, I did say to Loz when I saw him this morning, I went, oh, you got a nice haircut. You look sharp. And he goes, JR, I always look sharp.
Always
like,
sharp.
Nice work, Loz. boys, on a more serious note, we have been speaking about it this morning, but Nick Kyrgios will face court in Canberra next month. He's been charged with assaulting his former girlfriend after he allegedly grabbed her. Now, the maximum sentence for this is 2 years in jail. His barrister has said Nick does take these allegations very seriously, but because the matter is now before the court, he won't have a comment at this stage, but in time they will issue a media release. Wimbledon have also released a statement, but they've also gone along the same line saying they can't comment, but he will still play in his scheduled match tonight. So let's hope that Nick can put all this aside and still go out and perform really well in his quarterfinal tonight. He did post on social media at the time that these allegations were all coming out. He's got a photo there talking to a little youngster, and he basically has put the caption of, "This is why I played. All the youngsters out there, believe in yourself." And he had a little heart emoji on there. So hopefully he can put this all aside and still perform well tonight.
Yeah, and should stress as well that a statement through his lawyer is they're saying he's not even considered charged and that the allegations are not considered as facts. So you can say that, you know, obviously Kyrgios deeply denies the allegations and we'll fight them in court.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll keep everyone updated on that progress. Boys, another story that I've been following quite closely, and some of our listeners might have been as well, but one of America's most decorated basketballers, Brittany Griner. She's a seven-time WNBA All-Star. She's a two-time Olympic gold medalist. She was intending on playing in Russia during the league's off-season, but this is very common. Most WNBA players tend to go and play in other leagues during the off-season to make extra money, and she was detained in an international airport just near Moscow back in February when she was arriving from New York, and Russian officials had claimed at the time that she had vape cartridges containing hashish oil in her luggage, and that's facing a charge of up to 10 years in prison. Now, this happened back in Feb, and it was right before Russia invaded Ukraine, and we know that since then the US has imposed, as has Australia, lots of sanctions on Russia, and it is feared now that Brittany is a political pawn. Legal experts have told papers over in the US that her case will likely end in conviction, and it will be heard in Russia Saturday our time, and she has made a direct appeal to US President Joe Biden for her freedom. She's had a handwritten letter, and she has been allowed to write letters to her family. She hasn't actually physically spoken to them, but she's allowed to write letters that have been approved by Russian authorities and then passed on to her lawyers. And that's what she's done with the president. And she pretty much has said, please don't let me be forgotten about. And she's worried that she'll be there forever. So the US has openly said that Griner has been wrongfully detained by the Russian government, which means that they'll seek to negotiate her return rather than let this case play out in court for too long. So hopefully they can get a positive result, but from what legal experts are saying overseas is it's not looking too positive for
her. Yeah, that's a really desperate story, isn't it, that one? Thanks so much, JR.
Well, before you go, JR, I actually spoke about you yesterday to someone.
Oh, did you?
And I found out something about your swim that I didn't know.
Oh, what's that?
I didn't know once you finish your swim, you've only got 7 minutes to get off the land to get back into the water to swim to your boat.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's actually apparently a massive anticlimax when you get to France because you're there by yourself, your support, no one can come with you, and you have 7 minutes on the shores. You basically, you have to put your hands up to say, I'm done. And then I guess you take a selfie if you have your GoPro, and then you swim back to the boat.
And then you've got to get out. You've got to swim another 500
metres.
What do you
mean, like, get off the country?
Yeah.
Get out of the country,
yeah,
yes.
You've got to get off the land. So the French Coast Guard basically keeps an eye on it, and you've got to get straight off. So you can take a photo, but I'll be there by myself. So
yeah, no one else can do it.
No one else can do
it. You're not struggling to breathe. You're just trying to get some oxygen in.
Pretty much.
Like, I might need 10, but
get
no,
the air and just
seven.
Put your hands up, say, I've made it.
Well, it's not like you've got your passport with your
Loz. Well, actually, you do.
I didn't think.
do.
But I didn't think,
swim with it.
I didn't think. when stick they it under say your cap. That you go to another country, you actually you do, but you're not allowed to stay there. You've got to basically finish the swim. Mm. You got 7 minutes.
So
get out of there. Swim back 500 meters to the boat.
Yep.
Go back to
That's
your passport,
exactly
Jamie. Where are you carrying that under your cap?
So funnily enough, I know because they said as part of the rules you have to have your passport, and they even joke on the website saying, "Good luck keeping it dry," but it's just on the boat. So that if we do get pulled over by the Coast Guard, we all have our passports to say, "Here we are. We're just quickly popping into French waters, having a photo." Which is why I'm actually going to try and buy a really cheap drone. So if any of our listeners know drones, can someone please let me know a good cheap one in case so that my friend, you're allowed to have a drone fly over you so you can at least get some pictures and then swim back to the boat.
Okay, so I'll be there for 8 minutes. What, you're at the mercy of
French? I think you get into trouble.
Yep. French special forces.
15 years, yep. 15 years in jail.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Away you go.
Away I'm off.
Locked up.
Gee, that would be an interesting end to the English Channel.
Story to tell. Good on you, JR.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. We'll be back with the news at 7. Give us a call, 1353 53. Psycho Bunny, good morning to you.
Going all right?
Yeah, we're good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm from the Midwest. You got a relation, Jeff Middleton?
Jeff Middleton? Off the top of my head, not sure. There's a tribe of us, though. I'll have to ask my old man.
Yeah. Oh, that's not.
Do you know Jeff Middleton, do you?
Yeah, no, I was looking much with him back in Ireland.
All right. Well, if I describe Jeff, does he rate himself?
Like you. No, he looks like you, brother.
Oh, right. Because if he rates himself, yes, he's related to Middo, I would assume.
Incredible. This is from someone. What did you give yourself out of 10 yesterday?
8.5.
Unbelievable.
Mate, the reason I was calling, Matt, was I didn't get a chance to listen to you a lot yesterday coming home from work. That six again rule that you've been talking about.
Yep.
I mentioned one of the... I did phone in yesterday, but it was a bit late, but... I mentioned the fact that if people do it on the first, second tackle where it's awarded, why not tack the extra six tackles onto the six you're playing?
Oh, make it like an eight-tackle set.
Well, that'll stop them from doing it on the first or second tackle. If they're going to be facing like 10 tackles, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, I think
there's... You know what I mean? So what... like Loz was saying yesterday, that they'll do it on the first tackle, so they're only going to lose three tackles or something like that. But if you play the six out you got and then tack that next six onto that six you just played,
so you're getting 12 tackles.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That'll eliminate it.
That would eliminate it because people wouldn't take that risk. But are we making it then more confusing and more difficult? I don't
refs
know.
Refs will lose count.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Who's counting all the time?
Change the rule, you're just changing the application.
Mm. Yeah. Look, there's plenty of good ideas out there, but I just don't know whether we react off this one weekend or whether we wait and see what unfolds in the coming weeks as we get closer to the finals. Are we just jumping at shadows still, or if there's a trend there, we go, you know, we're going to get rid of this. We're going to find a better way around it.
Yeah, but how bad is it going to be if what happened to St George and Canberra on the weekend happens in a preliminary semi like that?
Yeah, I've been wondering that for a while. The referee should have read the game in that situation and saw what was happening and just blown the penalty instead of doing six against. Well, it is up for the referee to understand the game and where the game is, the context of the game, and to blow the penalty instead of waving six against
exactly.
When the team's 20 metres out and there's less than a minute to go. The referee's got to understand the context of the game.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. I don't know if they've been told to do it that way or directed to do it that way, but in times past, it wouldn't have happened.
Hmm. No,
Billy Harrigan wouldn't have done that.
No, Bill would have blown a penalty. Bill would have blown a penalty, and that was Bill's best attribute as a referee. He could read a game,
yeah,
and he reffed it to suit. Now, not everyone agreed with Bill's decisions, but he had such a great rapport with players, and they knew what they could do and what they couldn't do, but he understood the flow of the game, and he let some things go without being pedantic, but he would pull up if it was very serious, if it deserved to be penalised. But he also had a great understanding of the flow of the game and who was in control at what particular time and what moment, you know. And I think if you had a referee out there the other day, they knew what, you know, the Dragons boys were trying to do. Because you're coaching your players to do that, you know, last couple of seconds, just lie on there because that's what the rule allows you to do. So they took full advantage of it. But again, I think the referee should have been brave enough to go, you know what, this is exactly what I think they're doing. This should be a penalty rather than just waving a six to go or doing nothing about it.
Fresh from Origin camp there in Kingscliff with the Blues, Adam Pengilly, good morning to you, mate.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. I'm still trying to get over Jamie having to stay on the island for 7 minutes and get off. That just seems ridiculous.
I know.
And you've got to have the passport yourself. With her.
Have the passport with
her. Yeah. See it. When's the clock start as well? Like, is the water's obviously part of France as well, or does it start when your foot touches the sand? When's the 7 minutes start?
Soon as it touches the sand. As soon as you're out of the water.
Is that right?
Bang.
God. Someone's got a timer there.
Yeah.
Constable Jack Villeneuve or something. Yeah. From the
gendarmes.
Mate, before, first thing I want to ask you about, Adam, actually, is this golf yarn you've written in the Herald today about Lucas Herbert, a really nice story. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Jared, it's a great story. Lucas has obviously cracked the top 50 in the world at the moment. He's been doing great things the last few years for Australian golf, and obviously, if he's out the rank, he's won a tour event in the US. He's obviously won a DP World Tour event as well, having a chance to try and play well and contend in a few majors now. And he's obviously one of the rookies that came through the Golf Australia scheme many, many years ago, and he was helped a lot by people in Golf Australia, provided a lot of financial support to him. And Lucas has virtually turned around now and agreed to give all the money back that was given to him as an amateur, as a junior, to try and make his way in the game back to Golf Australia to help the next generation of golfers. So there is an agreement where some of those golfers, once they reach certain benchmarks, have to give a portion of that money back. But Lucas has turned around and virtually said, yeah, you can have it all back now. I'm comfortable in my life with the prize money I've earned and everything like that. And I'm led to believe the total sort of lands into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's a lot of money. Fantastic story that Lucas has done this. I had a quick chat to him on Monday night, just via Zoom. He's getting ready for the Open next week at St Andrews. And he sort of spoke a little bit about the LIV Golf Tour and Greg Norman's tour, saying that, listen, going to a tour like that's not going to do much in my career. My goals and ambitions are to win PGA Tour events, to win majors, and continue to rise up the rankings and play a President's Cup. And he said, if I go over that tour, well, it's not going to happen, obviously. So, yeah, I thought it was a really selfless gesture from Lucas, one of the great young golfers got going, playing for Australia at the moment and doing his thing on the world scene. So all power to him for this nice gesture.
Adam, have you got any update on, you know, these young jockeys that had these serious falls over the last couple of days?
Yeah, only limited information sort of being released, Laurie, in the last sort of 24 hours, but it is positive news when we put in those. There's only very small steps and obviously a long way to go yet. But Leah Kilner is making some sort of progress up there in Brisbane. I think Doc is going to try and bring her out of her induced coma for a little bit later today. Rob Heathcote, her master and trainer up there in Brisbane, visited her yesterday and reported the doctors are happy with her. She's still in the ICU, but in a stable condition. There's a long road ahead, obviously, for her, but as long as we keep getting those positive steps, that's great news. And with Alyssa Meredith's hospital in Newcastle, there's a release put out by Racing New South Wales last night. It was only a really short one, just saying the doctors are happy with her progress at the moment. She's got some scans which are looking positive, and hopefully more information will be known a little bit later today. But still a long way to go for both those girls, but we're taking any more sort of positive information we can get, and we've had some good information come through yesterday.
Yeah, fingers crossed, Adam. What about the tracks around New South Wales, mate? How's this weather hitting them?
Yeah, Clark, did you see any of these photos of Hawkesbury yesterday? It was just devastating to see the photos. The flooding just bleeding across the poly track and across to the course proper there. And officials out at Hawkesbury are saying that the floods that we've had over the last few days is even worse than what we had at the start of the year in sort of late February and March, which is quite staggering when you think about it. So it's going to take some time in particular for that track to recover. Obviously, the meeting today at Warwick Farm is being postponed to Canterbury tomorrow, so hopefully get that meeting away. But I just saw those photos of Hawkesbury come through yesterday, and it was just absolutely devastating. So that track's going to need a lot of work, and let's hope everyone out there can get to work and get some relief in the weather and get things back to normal, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks.
Is Artorias pressing on to the July Cup at Newmarket?
Yeah, he is, Jared. So he gets his chance this week in the July Cup at Newmarket. And Sam Friedman's made some comments over the course of the weekend saying he's happy with the horse. And no Australian trained horse has won that race, I don't think, in history. I think Shazier came the closest going back the best part of 20 years ago. But he was great in the Platinum Jubilee Stakes, as we mentioned, weaving a passage through from back in the ruck and running a luckless third, but you'd imagine the July Cup course are going to sit him down to the ground, and it'd be great for him to get his group one over there in the Northern Hemisphere to make himself a dual hemisphere stallion. He's been a frustrating horse for all the punters back here in Australia, but he might have just found his niche over there, taking on the second tier sprinter, I'd put in those terms, Gerald, over there in the UK.
What's the latest in Origin camp?
Laws, I made a little trip down to Lismore yesterday. The boys had their first very light session, just a walkthrough, basically, a lot of those guys who were covering from weekend games. And it was more about the community over there, and it was devastating to see, talking of floods, the situation in Lismore. That's a town that's really trying to get back on its feet after the devastating floods a few months ago. I actually parked in an area just across the road, just a council car park, and it didn't first hit me straight away, but it was fenced off with this temporary fencing, just had a whole bunch of demountables in the car park, and then I quickly realised that was virtually a shop front for a lot of local businesses up there. We're just operating out of demountable buildings in a council car park at the moment. Jeez. Even Domino's Pizza is working out of a demountable building, cooking pizzas for the locals just in the council car park. It was quite sad to see, and just going for a quick drive through the town centre, I reckon half the shops in town are still hoarded up. They're not operating, there's no business there. And the Blues brought a couple of very special people into camp there yesterday. The mayor addressed them in the dressing sheds for their training session, and for more reports is on the verge of breaking down in tears, speaking about the damage to his town. And a couple of the locals who literally got in a three-metre tinny and were sort of racing around the town in the floodwaters, rescuing people from their houses, were actually special guests of the team there yesterday, presented them with a jersey. And I was talking to them, listening to a couple of their stories, and they were saying people were on their balconies and screaming out for help. They had to make the decision to say, no, you guys are going to be okay, because there was people in far with graver danger in their houses. And one story in particular really resonated with me. There was an older guy, they said, they could see just through the window of his house on the top level, and I could only just see his neck and his face through the window above the floodwaters. They went in there and got him out, ripped him by the arm, and a whole bunch of skin came off his arm. He was an elderly gentleman in his 70s or 80s, and they eventually got him to safety. So you just can't imagine the harrowing situation those guys have been through. So I thought it was great to see the Blues have that community day there yesterday. Lots of young kids there, and they signed autographs, took photos for a very, very long time there yesterday with them. And they brought a smile to a lot of people's faces in Lismore yesterday.
Yeah, awesome from Brad Fittler and the Blues. The great thing about Origin laws, isn't it? I know Queensland were out in Warwick in the early part of this week as well. The community work these Origin teams do.
Oh, yeah, they've been doing it for a long time. You know, they get out, they showcase, you know, themselves by showing that it means something to them, you know, and they stand with them. And while they can't do a lot at the time, you know, these players go out and thank them for their support and thank them for the community service that they've done. You know, the stories that they would have heard yesterday would have affected the players. There's no doubt about that. They would have sat there, listened, thought about the scenarios that they face, and they try and compare it to what these guys have done. And it's nothing compared to what these guys have done. They've put their life at risk. As a rugby league player, you're just going out there playing sport that you love, and you know, you come off the field and you're happy with what you've been able to do. But to go through these floods the way that these people have, it's remarkable that we haven't lost a lot more people. But a lot of these people have lost their homes, lost their livelihoods, and that's far more important than a game of footy.
Good on you, Adam. Thanks so much.
Thanks, boys.
And also, it was announced earlier this week, the All-Stars game next year will be in Rotorua, across the ditch in New Zealand. So for the first time, the All-Stars game in New Zealand, which is, I think, a great call from the NRL, considering, obviously, the sacrifice of the Warriors and the lack of rugby league.
Yeah, and I think it's also good because of the fact that this concept has taken off between the Indigenous All-Stars and the Maori All-Stars. And they deserve to have a game over there in New Zealand and to support the game. And it'll be massive over there. I know it's massive here in Australia, but to have 12 months off here, to take it over there to New Zealand, to thank them for everything that they've done for the game, I think is a terrific gesture.